Welcome back to the Maggie Nolan Show. Really excited to be joined this half hour by Melissa Johnson, the executive director for Wisconsin's Green Fire, an organization dedicated to science-based research related to conservation of natural resources and environmental protection. Welcome, Melissa. So glad to have you.
Well, thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
I have to brag a little bit about your background because I want to thank you for your service to local government in so many different ways, shapes, and forms over the breadth of your career. She was elected to four terms as an alderperson for the city of Stevens Point, 5th District, where she chaired the Finance Committee. And she was elected to seven consecutive terms as president of Stevens Point's Common Council. Hats off, that's quite a feat. People don't... Them local politics can get pretty cutthroat.
I'm sure that's where the rubber meets the road, right?
in a very literal sense, right? Potholes and all that stuff, which you hear about so much when you work in local government. You also served three terms as supervisor on the Portage County Board. Again, you know tons about local government. You've also served as president of the Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin. You've held for over 20 years leadership roles in both the Solid Waste Association of North America Badger Chapter and the Wisconsin County Solid Waste Management Association. I couldn't think of a better expert to help us understand where Wisconsin is with PFAS. So again, my hat's off to you and my thanks to you, Melissa, for all your work in local government for Wisconsin's precious resources.
It is my pleasure. I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to be here because... I do a lot of mentoring to women who are entering their college careers or their professional careers and feel a little uncertain. So I always try to look for a woman that I can point them to, has done great things and has a powerful voice and is determined. And you certainly fall into that category.
Well, thank you so much. That's incredibly humbling. I like to think of my last 15 years as in service, and this is just a different way of doing that. And one of the things that I did when I worked in Milwaukee County was file suit in the fall of 2022 against PFAS manufacturers. The entire saga of PFAS in the United States is akin to me to... so many other great regulatory tragedies, right? Think smoking, think opioids, a whole gamut of regulatory failures, and PFAS is one of them. For folks that don't know, can you tell us what PFAS is and why did it start to get so widely used back in the 70s?
Well, we started using it. Well, let's go back, to research lab. I think it was in the 30s. And they were looking for researchers, and the federal government was looking for surfactants, things that would change the surface tension on the surface of airplane wings, and using different things. And that makes sense. You want to reduce the drag and all of those things. So in the lab researcher, and this is a story, I don't know the precise factual basis of this, but the story goes, a bit of a substance fell onto the researcher's shoe, cleaned it up, was time to leave. It was raining outside. Went home. Noticed when he got home where that spot was, where that compound fell, the water was repelling from it. It was like really weird. And so hence, poly and perfluoral alkyls were created. This class of chemicals, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them, were created. They are water repellent. They resist grease. They resist temperatures. And they have become so interwoven into our lives that I always call it a love-hate relationship.
Right.
We hate what they've done to the environment and to our public health, but we sure love our nonstick pans and all day makeup.
Yeah. I tell people, if you've had a Teflon pan, if you've had Stainmaster carpeting or furniture, if you've got makeup that wears all day, you probably have something that has a PFAS compound. And again, we're not talking about one chemical compound. We're talking about a classification of literally tens of thousands of these things. And it, the reason that, that Milwaukee County sued the manufacturers is because, one, they lied about its carcinogenic properties and basically covered that up for decades. Yep. They knew it caused cancer. Mm-hmm. And the second thing that they knew is that it is, to use the technical terms, biopersistent and bioaccumulative. What do those terms mean, Melissa, for all of us that aren't scientists?
Well, I always like to go back to PCBs and dioxin. So, and I'm looking behind you in your image, you've got the bridge there. And we had a love-hate relationship with PCBs too. So several decades ago, 30, 40, 50 years ago, they started recognizing that PCBs were bioaccumulating in the tissue, primarily of fish. They started noticing, especially fish with a lot of fatty tissues like trout. Lake trout is a nice fatty fish. And they went, holy smokes, if it's accumulating in the flesh of fish, is it bioaccumulating in our own bodies? Is it bioaccumulating in plants? And what that means is we are taking it up, and instead of, in the case of humans and fish, dispelling it as waste, urine or feces, it gets absorbed into either protein tissues, fatty tissues, those types of things. PCBs are a little more bioaccumulative than PFAS, but they are bioaccumulative nonetheless. Some PFAS have a very short half-life, several months. Others have a much longer half-life, which means the rate at which we expel it, it could be years.
When you put those things together, and the one other sort of category of stuff that I forgot to mention is anything that's flame retardant when you have to deal with extremely high temperatures. So think oil and jet engine fuel fires. It was basically prescribed by the Federal Aviation Administration that PFAS-based foam had to be available and used at airports in case there were jet engine fuel-based fires. But general flame retardation, clothes, blankets, tents, pick your thing, also has PFAS in it. So when you couple together the fact that it's biopersistent and bioaccumulative, even if it's in very small amounts over the lifetime of a human being, it ends up accumulating in our body. Literally every person has some micro level of PFAS. It's in our water, it's in our soil, and it's in our bodies already.
When I first, about maybe 2017, I had never heard the term PFAS. And then in 2018, I was running the Marathon County Solid Waste Department. And if you know anything about landfills, you know that all the liquid that accumulates there has to be transported or collected and transported out for treatment before it's sent into a body of water, which makes sense. But what I was learning was our wastewater treatment plant was saying, whoa, if you've got PFAS in that leachate, we don't want it. And so you're the bad guy. And I went, wait a minute, all of the garbage that I take in on a daily basis is not all mine. It's everybody's. So I'm like, okay, I went, okay, what can we do? I need to get into learning mode before I get into attack mode. And one of the things I learned was that even polar bears in the Arctic have PFAS in their blood. It's kind of like lead. The way we started changing gasoline, because we started seeing lead, evidence of lead in wildlife in the far reaches of our planet, that where no one ever expected to run a vehicle with lead gasoline. So this stuff becomes airborne. It simply is there, and it's kind of like, you know, that bad penny that just keeps showing up.
Yeah, it leaches. You know, if you think about it, is in our waste, it's in all animal waste, because it's in our water systems. And so all waste that we produce, not just feces and urine, but any sort of waste, all the things that we throw out, as they biodegrade, because some chemical compounds that are PFAS have this longer half-life, they get into our groundwater, it gets into our soil. And one of the challenges with PFAS, as I understand it, Melissa, that it's very hard to remediate. If you think about something that basically beads and can't be burned, so it's not water soluble, can't be burned away, how the hell do you fix it? What do we do with the darn stuff?
Well, I just want to say one thing. Landfills are not typically a source of groundwater contamination. I want to clear that up. So a modern landfill has all kinds of mechanisms to protect the environment. They're not perfect, but they are not the main contributors. So a number of things. A couple of years ago, the legislature did approve money to collect a lot of AFFF, so that firefighting foam that has PFAS. There were a lot of rural fire departments that didn't need this stuff. They didn't have chemical factories. They didn't have airports. And so we did the right thing. The legislature passed it. The DNR set up a collection program to get it out of their storage areas. And the plan was, well, we're just going to send it off and incinerate it.
Good luck with that. We're going to have to take a couple of quick messages, Melissa.
Okay.
I'm hoping you can stick around for a little bit more
time. I can.
Wonderful. We're going to talk about what PFAS remediation looks like, how it works, and where you can go to find out more information, not just about Melissa's organization, Wisconsin Green Fire, but also about PFAS regulation, both on a state and national level. Keep it locked, everybody. More incredibly important information about your environment, your drinking water, your soil, coming up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've got a question for Melissa, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Yeah, there's something in our water. Oh, boy. There's a bunch of stuff in our water. But I'm joined by Wisconsin Green Fire's Melissa Johnson, the executive director of that great organization. She has done almost everything that I can think of solid waste management related here in the state of Wisconsin. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for that work in public service. We need more folks like you. She's been adjunct faculty at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point Soils and Waste Resources Program. Co-created the curriculum for both the introductory and advanced waste management classes. And as she mentioned, she directed business operations and solid waste programming and facilities serving central and north central Wisconsin. And of course, was the director of solid waste management for Marathon County and Portage County for over two decades. Welcome back, Melissa. So happy to have you with us. So what the heck do we do with PFAS? If we're going to try to remediate it or remove it, where do we put it? What do we do with it? I know people tried to burn it. How'd that go?
Well, what we found out was it's not going to go really well. And in fact, the Department of Defense, for a number of years, they recognized they had PFAS contaminated waste and they had AFFF, that firefighting foam. And they said, well, we're just going to throw it in our incinerators. And then I think it was the Environmental Defense Fund. I think that was the group. They started doing soil sampling near those incinerators. And they found out that the deposition, in fact, it was just going up the stack and then being deposited in the soils around those incinerators. And I think it was 2 years ago, the Department of Defense says, stop, we're not going to incinerate any more PFAS waste. So now what do you do?
Right.
So what do you do with a waste product you don't want? You go, oh, landfills.
Mm-hmm.
So you cycle it. So you're sending it to the landfill, and we have water percolating through waste mass. And that's just the function of a landfill. It rains, it snows, whatever. Waste is wet. Now you've got the liquid that needs to be taken out of the waste, You pump it out, you send it to the wastewater treatment facility. But because you cannot treat for these easily, you are just cycling it through the environment. Now let's suppose you put in a treatment system, a granulated activated carbon system, a reverse osmosis system. All you're doing is taking a whole bunch of waste, whether it's wastewater, leachate, whatever, you're taking a whole bunch of it and you're consolidating it into a filter or a membrane. Guess where that has to go?
Back to the landfill?
Back to the landfill. So yeah, I know it's the mad, mad world, right?
It is.
There is some research going on in destructive technologies, trying to pull that carbon fluorine bond apart. And what I'm told is it's the most powerful chemical bond there is carbon and fluorine. And that's what makes up that PFAS compound. Mm-hmm. What they want to try to do, what the researchers are trying to do with destructive technologies, not just treatment, destructive, is break that up. There's a number of different technologies. Some of them are using, electro-oxidation technologies. Some are as simple as using some really basic solutions and heating it up. But right now, we don't have a good solution because scaling those up to make those affordable,
yes,
for municipalities,
we're not there yet. Yeah, this is the trick with so many technological advances is PFAS is so widespread. It's in so many communities and in so many forms, right? That it's okay. Well, even if we've cracked the proverbial technology nut of how to unbind these two most strongly bound compounds or chemicals, I should say, we can't scale it because to scale it is cost prohibitive. What's the state of Wisconsin doing now to help remediate PFAS?
Nothing.
There you go.
I think that's the easy answer. There have been a number of bills over the last couple of years. All of them have failed. However, SB 312 is one that was in this last session. That is, I believe, with the governor's desk. My organization asked for a veto of that. It weakened what we call the spills law, and Maggie, you're probably very familiar with the spills law. It's what protects the public from polluters, and it makes polluters pay for their pollution.
Commercial polluters, right? And this was
commercial.
We actually talked a little bit about this on my show because people were wondering, well, why would the governor veto this bill that's supposed to help with PFAS? Well, because conservatives slipped into that bill, weakening of the legal responsibility that runs to commercial polluters. They claimed it was to avoid holding sort of me and you type
innocent landowners. Yeah. Right.
Well, come on now, unless it's really, really clear, it's going to cover bad actor commercial polluters as well.
It will. And interestingly, a lot of people thought that there was a funding mechanism in that bill. All that bill says is the DNR will establish a grant program. It didn't allocate money. Yeah, it didn't say
air quotes up.
Right. So I think what we have $125 million sitting in a PFAS trust fund. That was part of the last budget, which was approved. Whereas my note 245 days ago, that $125 million has been sitting in a trust fund, and the legislature will not release it to the municipalities impacted. Not everybody is. Wausau, for instance, Rhinelander, La Crosse, Madison. There are a number of communities struggling with this, but that money is sitting. SB 312 would not have allocated that out.
Yeah, so it's a bunch of window dressing, as we would say.
A little bit. We want something substantive. If we want cleanup standards for soils or waste, let's do that as a standalone. I mean, it's a big topic. Let's do it right.
Yeah.
If we want to allocate out money, then let's advance a fiscal bill and let's get it going.
Instead of an unfunded quote grant mandate to the DNR, and what are you, it's a whole lot of sound and fury signifying basically nothing. Melissa, where can people go to find out more about Wisconsin's Green Fire?
They can go to www.wigreenfire.org. And if you're interested in PFAS, I would encourage you go to the tab where it says Our Work, publications, Our Work, and you're going to find two PFAS papers there. They're pretty comprehensive. They're fairly easy read. They do have some really good resource information. And I think most people wanting to dive into this will find it very useful.
Thanks so much, Melissa Johnson, Executive Director for Wisconsin's Green Fire, a science-based organization working to support conservation and a clean environment for all Wisconsinites. Call your state legislators, demand actual, meaningful legislative action and funding to help Wisconsin remediate PFAS, and let's support Governor Evers' hopeful veto of SB 312, because sound and fury signifying nothing helps no one. My thanks to Melissa. We'll be back with more on the Maggie Dawn Show in just a few minutes. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Melissa Johnson, Executive Director of Wisconsin's Green Fire, a longtime public servant in the solid waste space in Marathon County and Portage County on Stevens Point's Common Council, the Portage County Board. And of course, she also served as adjunct faculty at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point Soils and Waste Resources Program. What a wonderful expert to have here on the show. We'll have her back during Earth Week. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss what comes up in that wonderful month of May, I believe, is Earth Week. So we've got some time to plan for that. But as our intro music promised, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Oscars, because we have our own subject matter expert here on the Maggie Dawn Show. That's Anya Esther, film major extraordinaire. Before we get there, I wanted to give our longtime listener and very patient man, Mark from Prairie du Sac, a shot at it. Mark, what do you have to say this half hour?
Yeah, thanks so much, Maggie, and especially the PFAS issue. It's critically important we address that issue sooner rather than later. And thanks again for putting CG on the bench, because it just gets so annoying when he won't answer the question. I mean, there's women that I know that have related stories about sexual assault to me that leaves lifelong scars on them, and how somebody can reach the mental gymnastics to just overlook the fact that the leading Republican candidate for president of the United States is a man who has been adjudicated to have committed rape. And by his own admission, he's admitted to committing sexual assault on many, many occasions that just grabbed by their... And it's just sad that he can't do it. There's a, you know, that... But I guess there's just no cure for being a jackass. I mean, that when it comes to...
Couldn't agree with you more, Mark. Thanks as ever and always for your ears and your input. All are welcome on the Maggie Dawn Show. Even CJ on occasion, I'll always give him a crack at it, but maybe not for a couple of weeks. A little cooling off period, as they say. But let's talk about the Oscars, Anya.
Oh, let's.
Now, Yeah, let's do. First and foremost, did you get a chance to watch some of the Oscars? Are you an Oscars watcher? They've been hurting for ratings in the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I did not watch it live. I had plans to have a whole Oscars party. And then honestly, just my energy level caught up with me. And I said, friends, you know, it was already billed as the most casual Oscars party possible. I said, it's so casual, it's not even happening. But I watched
tapping your heads.
exactly. So I watched the majority of it through clips after the fact. I was much more impressed with the presentation of the Oscars ceremony itself this year than I have been probably my whole adult life. It was genuinely funny. It was genuinely touching. Nobody got hit.
There was no slapping
on stage, you know, none that we could see, thankfully, right? So I think this is starting to get in the right direction again, where the Oscars is actually something that's enjoyable, profound, important, and not just here's some slapstick by some folks who are unfortunately deeply out of touch. That's not to say Kimmel's entirely in touch, but it's getting a little better, I'd say.
There's no perfect host for the Oscars, and it's a difficult brief. I there's a lot of egos in the room. There's a lot of opinions about people that are watching. If you watch the Oscars and you want to weigh in, you've got thoughts about how the Oscars have been running these last couple of years, mired by a lot of controversy. If you think the Oscars have omitted or overlooked really important work, I want to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I've got some opinions on that myself. I thought it was an interesting decision to start the Oscars earlier. They basically promised people, we're gonna end on time, gosh darn it, which, unlike live radio, people just go over. They hear the music.
Just skip their ads. I don't know why we can't. That's not fair.
Right. Deep Thoughts by Maggie and Anya. Why can't we talk over our commercial time? No, they came close. They still ran over their 3-hour target. But I thought it was an interesting choice to start earlier. I don't know what I was doing on Sunday, but all of a sudden on my phone, I got this pop-up that Divine Joy Randolph had won Best Supporting Actress for The Holdovers. And I was like, wait, the Oscars started? It was so early. But I think that's an interesting step to try to not have it go quite so late into the evening. I remember a few bleary-eyed nights. Of course, last year's Oscars mired or sort of overshadowed by the Will Smith, Chris Rock interaction on stage, also a flub for the best film presentation. I mean, the Oscars, again, in the last 2-3 years have really been mired by a lot of controversy. One of the things that I thought was really quite funny during this year's Oscars was Jimmy Kimmel riffing live because the leader of the MAGA movement, the one and only DJT, was apparently tweeting on Truth Social about Kimmel. You know what? I really like it when my presidential candidates are focused on the most important things that are happening in our country from a public policy perspective, like who's hosting the gosh darn Oscars. Kimmel, no fan of Donald Trump, makes fun of him all the time on his late show. So Trump, of course, couldn't help himself but to tweet about the way Kimmel was hosting the Oscars. Let's listen to a little bit of the ad lib that Kimmel did in the Oscars.
I'm really proud of something. I was wondering if I could share it with you. I just got a review, and has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Slopanopoulos. He would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Blah, blah, blah. Make America great again.
You know, it's interesting. Even when I just want to talk about the Oscars on the show today, it all comes back around on the Maggie Don Show. Because what is Trump referencing? The Representative Mace interview from earlier on Sunday morning, where she wouldn't answer the question about Trump being a rapist and how can you possibly support a rapist as a sexual assault survivor? We got folks commenting online, watching us on YouTube. PJ, what's up, friend? John Cena coming out nude during the Oscars, I gotta say, was freaking hilarious. I have rewatched some of that film. Like, did they use the typical, you know, like Hollywood cover up thing?
Some sort of dancer belt?
Yeah, he looked pretty damn naked to me, Anya. What'd you think?
Oh, well, you're saying that like I look too closely, Maggie. But yeah, I was impressed by the envelope placement, whatever sort of special effects might have been done. And I'm proud of, not proud of, but I found John Cena's confidence in himself very endearing, that to go out there and say, you know, I'm truly bearing it all for Hollywood tonight.
Yeah, well, John Cena's, if he can't walk out on a stage naked, like, all hope is doomed.
Truly.
For body positivity, because the guy is chiseled out of her. I like the fact that he didn't put on a bunch of fake tanner. He was, like, translucing on stage, was he not? By the way, that Chris Rock, Will Smith interaction was in 2022, not last year. I believe last year was the Biffed announcement of best film of the year. Yeah, John Cena was definitely a highlight for me. I thought, again, Kimmel is a funny guy. He has a way about engaging with an audience in this very casual and conversational tone. I think on balance, he does a really good job as a host. That is not an easy gig. Lots of criticism for the host of the Golden Globes, sort of canned and a little bit difficult. You got to be able to read that room. What I think is hilarious, it's not just his ability to riff real time. You know, I'm sure production at the Oscars was like, don't talk about the Trump tweet.
In fact, we know that they were telling them that, which as a producer, I find horrifying. But as a fan, very interesting entertainment.
It is. And the you can kind of tell Donald Trump doesn't know left from right when he's going after the guy that's had a very successful late night show for how many years now? I mean, attack someone who maybe isn't actually good at their job, like your lawyers, you keep losing. But so you defend that which is indefensible and what's obviously a complete and utter total screw up, like the Republican rebuttal to the State of the Union. And then you slam the stuff that's getting great ratings. It just doesn't add up. You want to comment on the Oscars, 855-75-CIVIC. One of my favorite listeners, Joanne, how you doing and what say you?
Great show. I just want to tell you again, as you have noted, that the Oscars can overlook some amazing films. If you're a Robert Downey Jr. fan and you don't like all of the shoot 'em up stuff that he's been doing lately and the science fiction stuff, you might want to, as well as Oppenheimer, you might want to go to a film from the year 2000 called Wonder Boys, which is the best film ever about higher education. It's with Michael Douglas and Tobey Maguire, who is the Wonder Boy, and Robert Downey Jr. And if you ever wonder what being a professor is like, watch Wonder Boys. You will find out what that life is all about. So,
thanks much, Joanne. And I got to say, great minds think alike. I love the movie Wonder Boys. I remember stumbling upon it. And it's a longer film based on a book. It's absolutely fantastic. Tobey Maguire does a really incredible job in that movie. Everybody, I think, at their A acting game. Again, a really interesting microcosm look into higher education. Check that one out. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the misses that I've seen the Oscars make. And I wanted to start, this one goes way back in the day for many of us. But I have been a Spike Lee fan for a very long time. And he has been slighted and overlooked for many, many years. Finally got some credit. The Oscars acknowledged him. But a little bit too little, too late. Oftentimes, Lifetime Achievement Awards sort of doled out because like, oh, we missed you when you should have gotten an Oscar for Best Director. So we'll give you this Lifetime Achievement Award. It happens a lot. But I think one of the most egregious misses that really speaks to Oscars so white was in 1990. The winner of Best Film that year was Driving Miss Daisy, which is did not age well. Can we just say that? Ugh. And the Spike Lee joint that came out that year was Do the Right Thing, which I think not only stands up in terms of it ages incredibly well, it's also a time capsule into this particular moment in the early 90s. And it really, they were, some people absolutely hated this movie when it came out, which I find bizarre. Others claimed that it was going to basically incite rioting, if you can imagine that. The Do the Right Thing, again, 1990 film by Spike Lee, was going to start people rioting.
Even though the whole film is kind of about how that doesn't, yeah. Oh, so they watched the film very closely. Good to know, good to know.
Yeah, the main character in Do the Right Thing, a guy by the name of Mookie, he's so angry and he's so righteously angry that he ends up smashing a pizzeria window. It's a movie about racial dynamics and power and who has access to power and who doesn't, who gets listened to and who doesn't. Danny Aiello, who was in Do the Right Thing, was also nominated in that year for Best Supporting Actor. But Spike Lee didn't receive a nod or even a nomination for his screenplay. Again, I really just think, or his directing of that movie, and the counterpoint that it was Driving Miss Daisy, which is this rose-colored glasses glossing over of American racial tensions, to say the very least, that one, boy, that moment for the Academy definitely doesn't age well. Listen, if you want to get in your two cents about what the Oscars and the Academy has screwed up, or what you loved about or hated about this year's Oscars, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be back with a couple more thoughts about the Oscars after these important messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin. We are talking all things Oscars here on the last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show on this Tuesday edition. Just one correction. Spike Lee did get nominated for Best Screenplay in 1990 for Do the Right Thing, but was a shutout of the Best Director category, which, again, none of it ages well. The film wasn't one of the nominees for Best Film. Again, does not age well, given that Driving Miss Daisy won. Anya, what are some of your big Oscar misses?
Oof. Well, I used to, this is my whole thing. I think so much about the Oscars is just a miss. I think a lot of folks who aren't into film the way I am don't realize so many of the rules behind even getting nominated. The Oscars is essentially a very glorified award show for what is ostensibly an L.A. film festival. Your film has to play in LA for 2 weeks. It's weeks. It's extremely expensive. And it leaves out a ton of really important international films. And frankly, even films from the US that just can't afford to break into the LA market. So I think the Oscars from its genesis point at times can be a miss. But for sure, I mean, we can go back to Hattie McDaniel's winning an Oscar for her portrayal of us of a slave in Gone with the Wind, and the fact she wasn't allowed to be in the same theater as everybody else nominated was a white person. That's a huge miss. The Academy's response to Marlon Brando forfeiting his space for his speech to Indigenous activist Sasheen Littlefeather, who was, the Academy allowed the gathered audience to boo and jeer at her. It took like 6 or 7 security officers to keep John Wayne, famous for shooting Native Americans on film. For some reason, he had opinions about Native Americans having opinions. Don't know why he did. But I consider these things to be major, major misses. And I think, too, societally, I just want to remind people that the Oscars are not the seal of good film, nor are the films nominated the only good films or inherently good films. I think Maestro, the fact that Maestro was even nominated is I find it distasteful and wrong with it being Oscar bait and with some of the, frankly, really poor choices that production made about its portrayal of Leonard Bernstein, and particularly his face, particularly having Bradley Cooper wear a prosthetic nose to portray the late Jewish composer. So many misses in that. But I think that there were really bright moments in this year's production. Divine Joy Randolph's speech was amazing. So many of the women who presented, and the performance of I'm Enough was so good. Emma Stone broke her dress when she was dancing to it and had to talk about that when she went up for her award. So don't let me be too much of a Debbie Downer on the Oscars. I just reminder there's good film out there, whether or not the Academy knows it. That's all.
Could not agree more. One of the weird tidbits that I read this year is that they have tried to update their nominating process for the Oscars. It used to involve, and I'm not kidding you, something involving flashlights. I did not know. There's
it's
just
a cult. I'm sorry. So many of the Oscar rules are cult-like. The way that people are able to get in, you have to have two or three standing members. So it's like, oh, cool. I'm sure that this room of all white men will definitely start recommending people who are not at all like all their buddies who are already in the room, and they're the only folks who get to decide. How did we? This isn't a question.
It's weird. Again, one shout out from this year. Again, the speech by Divine Joy Randolph is really something. Why don't we take a listen?
So good. To that theater department, there's something for you there. And I thank my mother for doing that. I thank you to all the people who have stepped in my path and has been there for me, who has ushered me and guided me. I am so grateful to all you beautiful people out here. For so long, I've always wanted to be different. And now I realize I just need to be myself. And I thank you. I thank you for seeing me. Ron Van Loo, I thank you.
Yeah, it's a really amazing speech. She was in The Holdovers. I check the movie out. I also, another highlight was the actress Lily Gladstone nominated for Best Actress. She is a First Nation person, and she wore, as part of her Oscar outfit, had this beautiful cape that was in part sewn by Wisconsin First Nation people. So there was a little shout out to Wisconsin and our First Nation people. So just incredibly amazing and beautiful. I thought she looked fabulous.
She looked amazing. And I highlighted a live performance earlier. So let me also say, if you haven't watched the Osage Nation tribal drummers play at the Oscars, after what I've just said about the treatment of Sashi and Little Feather, the treatment of Native Americans in Hollywood, go check it out. It is moving. It is profound. And frankly, we owe these folks our vision and our witness to them coming forward and performing something so sacred on such a huge screen, on such a huge stage. Very, very cool stuff.
That I thought was absolutely a highlight and really amazing. So much going on there. The theme in so many of the Oscar misses to me is when the Academy has shied away from films that raise complex, difficult subjects. Denzel was passed over in 1993 for his portrayal of Malcolm X. Brokeback Mountain didn't receive a nod for best film. Pam Grier didn't get a best actress nomination in 98 for her work in Jackie Brown. The Color Purple did not get its due in 1986 either. The actual winner was Out of Africa. Again, some complexity here. The Green Book in 2019 took home best picture. Again, whitewashing questions of race, gender, and identity in this country seems to have been part of the Oscar brand. I hope that this Oscars is what we are going to see as a tipping point, a progression forward to a much more rich tapestry that embraces all of the stories that Americans and our international family has to offer, because that is what film is about, telling all sorts of stories about all kinds of people. That is it for me and Anya Esther this Tuesday afternoon. I'll be back with more tomorrow. You're not going to want to miss it, being joined by judicial candidate Rochelle Johnson-Bent. We're going to talk about the importance of trial court judges to the Wisconsin court system and what you should be looking for in your judicial candidates. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Anya Esther. Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together. See y'all tomorrow. I'm a riot through your borders. Call me bulletproof. Love forgive-